Nutrition is great, very important. You need that. Your exercise is important. Sleep is very important. But the biggest factor, not just for a momentary joy, but for brain building over time, is building your life around your purpose, challenging yourself around your purpose, pushing yourself around your purpose, not just settling for a repetitive, but pushing yourself, pushing the edge of the envelope. And nobody knows that better than you. Nobody knows where your edge is. You do. Keep pushing that edge around your purpose and your passion is the thing that's going to give the most bang for the buck as far as longevity is concerned, as far as brain health is concerned, and as far as brain capacity is concerned, well into your 80s, 90s, and beyond.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the Happy Pair Podcast. Yay! Firstly, I just want to say thanks a mil to everyone who's ordered our book.
What's the book called, Steve?
It's called The Veg Book, but there's amazing feedback online, just how simple, how accessible, how people are loving the concept, and we're feeling delighted with it and chuffed.
Yeah, so really, first and foremost, thanks for your support. We're most grateful. And if you're interested, there's a link down below. So thanks a mil.
Lovely. I have a few questions I want to ask you guys basically around, I mean, I think some people find you somewhat unrelatable at times, and I'm guessing it might be because of your consistent healthy lifestyles in some ways. And one thing that I want to ask was, Steve, other than when you go away on holidays, how many times have you not gone down to the Sunrise Swim? Because I saw you even in your story this morning, you were there by yourself at quarter
never.
To five.
Never. Like for real. Like I have this discipline part of my body that if I say I'll do something, like I'll do it. And if I don't do it,
how many days are you on your Duolingo streak?
Oh, like 650 days.
Like I don't know, we all
I'm really disciplined.
I made it to 80, and then like when I was
we all have problems. And one of my problems is that I'm remarkably disciplined, and I love it. Like it's something that feeds my soul, and like I also feel like, as with anything in life, what you do more of, like kind of more happens. And I think like showing up, and although it's early, like and it's hard getting up and like that, but like bringing tea down and just the peace and the silence.
Did you just have your big flask of tea for 20 people just for you this morning?
Yeah. No, Yvonne shows, normally someone shows up, but even still, even if it's not like, it's kind of the perfect opportunity, like where you just have to take what happens. Like you show down, you don't know if there's anyone going to be there, but I feel a sense of obligation to show up just in case someone shows up. So I'm there and have the chat.
But
and,
I think it's great.
And I love it.
Even like, you know, I was consistent doing the swim every day and I wouldn't miss it for a while there. And then like, once I got pregnant, and I was like, oh, I don't have to go down. Once you allow yourself not to, it's very easy to continue not going.
But I think that's and for anyone listening here, so sunrise at the moment, it's now June. So it's like, it's before 5 a.m. in Ireland, super early. Whereas throughout the rest of the year, it changes. Like, you know, it'll be 6 o'clock by August, by September, it'll be half six. And it'll be times of the year when it's really nice.
It's funny, because you pick your poison. Like, do you want to have incredibly cold in January, but you get to lie in till like 9:30? Or do you want to have it nice and warm, but you have to get up at like 4 a.m.
I wouldn't necessarily say nice and warm because it's never
less
nice,
cold.
Less cold.
Okay, less cold.
I think, and interesting in that one, I used to always be the same as Steve. Like I'd feel like I was letting Steve down if I wasn't going down. But recently,
letting Steve down.
Well, it was more letting you down than I'm not there to support Steve. Like that's more what I'd be like. I'd feel bad about you rather than about
you,
like Megan. I love you too. but like recently, I've kind of gone like, I love you, Steve. I really, really do. But I'm not getting up to like 5 or 5:15. Like I'm going to lie in till 5:15. How indulgent.
You wild man.
Well, no, it was only a few years ago. I've said this before. Well, like I don't set an alarm. So I when I wake up, I get up and then I go down. And that's usually around, you know, 5:15 or something like that this time of year.
But like, so on that topic of obviously yours is a bit like maybe borderline OCD.
Definitely.
Possibly.
But you go to bed like the same night. And you, when you were just away there in London, this is the first time I've ever heard of you staying up beyond midnight.
We had 4 nights past midnight. And we were intoxicated with excitement and joy and exuberance. It was wonderful.
Because you normally go to bed at 9. So what time did you get
last
up
night? I went
morning?
To bed at 8. Ned actually took me into bed. Ned's 5, by the way.
Yeah, I was like falling asleep all day and then got into bed at 8:30 and slept till 5:30. So yeah, I was grand. But there was one night we went to bed at 1 and then we were up at 4:45 to go for runs with people. And we just had so much fun. We just kept, like, there was so much exciting stuff that we didn't fall over at all. But yesterday I was useless.
So what would you say as a tip to anyone listening out there of how to be consistent with them?
I think have a reason. I think if the reason is service or possibly like
community,
it's the social accountability in the sense of I'm not just doing this for myself. I'm going to bring tea down because I want to hold space for our community and I want to give an opportunity for us to create the fertile soil for our community to grow. You know that way?
And
I know that sounds artistic and pious and all that, but in essence, it's that because like on my own, it's hard to get up every morning to get in and swim on my own. But the fact that I know someone could show up and they could show up from wherever and they could just want to have swim and it could be something that they're looking forward to. I think it's really lovely and it's really nice to meet them and greet them and have the chats. And I don't know, I love it. It nourishes my soul in so many ways. And it's hard and it's disciplined and I can come across as OCD. But
yeah,
I love it.
Definitely. All of that.
Yeah,
you gave the sales pitch on farewell.
Yeah, but I think you did it well and I'm drawn into it. Kind of makes me like, yeah, I'll be there tomorrow.
Oh, it's Yvonne's birthday tomorrow. Well, you'll be listening to this on Wednesday, but it was Yvonne's birthday on Tuesday and she'll be there.
Oh, it's Sab's birthday tomorrow too.
Yeah, Sab is your wife. Yeah, Yvonne is a lovely lady from Graysense.
Yeah, our friend, a wonderful ceramic artist.
She's brilliant.
What are you doing for Sab's birthday, Dave?
We're going for a walk in the morning anyway, I know. And then we're going for dinner with the kids at some stage in the evening. And in between, I'm sure we'll have lunch.
My favorite is when I ask you what you're buying her for a present. You're like, I'm buying her headphones. It's okay. She already knows. And I nearly bought them in the airport. And then she told me to wait because she's the most practical person. She just didn't want me to just go ahead and buy anything.
Yeah. She really is. No, it's great.
So there's no surprises.
No, zero. It's great. It's really. Yeah, I really appreciate it anyway. Okay,
well, this week's podcast, we should talk about it now. So it's one that we've enjoyed immensely. And I know we say this every week, but like...
This was particularly amazing.
Oh, it was beautiful. Like, they're shiny, glorious, radiant humans.
And I shouldn't say although, but incredibly acclaimed doctors and also have the ability to speak from the heart and speak like from this deeper place of wisdom, not just knowledge.
So we cover the topic of dementia and mental health and Alzheimer's, which we learned is the biggest cost on kind of healthcare costs
in the US.
I heard a stat.
It's the leading cause of death in the UK.
Yeah, in many countries in the world. It's in the top five in most countries in the world. You know, I think in the US it was between 1 and 17 people will get dementia. And there's a massive lifestyle component to it where I've heard them quote before that it can be up to 80% can be related to lifestyle issues. So it really is. There's a serious, we can all have a massive impact in terms of our mental health, particularly as we age. And we cover so many practical, wonderful things in these conversations. And really, just in terms of Dr. Dean and Aisha, so they're husband and wife duo. And these are two of the most qualified people I think we've ever had in the podcast, particularly in terms of their field. So Dr. Dean Shirazai, he's a behavioral neurologist whose entire life has been dedicated to behavioral change models, the community and population level, co-director of the Alzheimer's Prevention Program at Loma Linda University. He completed two fellowships, the National Institute of Health and a UC San Diego. He also has two master's degrees in clinical research and epidemiology, an executive leadership degree from Harvard Business School and a PhD in healthcare leadership.
You struggle with that word epidemiology.
Yeah, I know. It's a hard one.
Well, Aisha Shirazai is a neurologist and co-director of the Alzheimer's Prevention Program at Loma Linda University, where she leads the lifestyle program for the prevention of neurological disease. She's also a trained plant-based chef, culinary artist, and an amazing human being. She also holds a master's in advanced science from UCSD. Subsequent to completing her residency, Dr. Shirazai completed a fellowship in vascular neurology from Columbia University and is currently enrolled to finish a PhD in women's leadership.
They're both like medical doctors. So these guys are the real deal. They really, really are. And they've been applying it and practical. And they make some really easy to apply kind of...
Anyway, you get the impression. Yeah. We're huge fans. They're brilliant.
Yeah, really
content's
are.
Deadly. And they're really...
You're going to love this one. You're going to love this one. You really, really are. I can't wait.
Anyway, hold your hat on. Brace yourselves. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you the wonderful duo Dr. Shirazai.
Woo-hoo! But anyway, it really is such an honor to have you here today because we've really admired what you've done for a long time. So, and your books are brilliant. They really, really are. I'm really, you know, mom's been into, she's always been curious about dementia. And I wouldn't say curious, I'd say
afraid.
A tiny little bit kind of concerned about it as many people are. And, you know, I think your work is so, so, so relevant to so many people. So
thank you so much. Thank you. We're the same tribe. We're trying to do good in the world. And, it's such a pleasure to be connected with you all. So happy to disperse this information.
great, great. So dementia is the umbrella term for kind of cognitive health issues, isn't that right? Like
it is.
Alzheimer's is a subset of dementia.
It is. Right, yeah. Yes. There are many types of dementias: Alzheimer's, frontotemporal, Lewy body disease, Parkinson's dementia, Huntington's dementia, which is a terrible one, which comes very early. And also all kinds of metabolic dementias as a result of head trauma or, you know, some thyroid deficiency. But Alzheimer's is the most common one by far, about 70% of all dementias.
And it's like, I was amazed here. I didn't realize the extent that dementia is, it's the biggest killer or one of the biggest killers. Or it's one of the biggest costs in terms of the medical system. Are those correct?
Yeah, I think it's the number one in the UK and in Japan. And it's pretty high up there in the top five in most countries around the world. And it's not because it's happening more often. It's because, well, obviously because of just unhealthy lifestyle and because of medications that prolong life or other diseases, you know, they don't really get rid of the pathological processes that cause dementia. So you have a whole lot of people living with this devastating disease.
And the cost is just bewildering. Even though it's not number one in US, it's by far the number one costliest disease. The second costliest disease is heart disease at $120 billion or so. Alzheimer's direct and indirect costs combined is more than $500 billion. Mm. And it's expected to rise to more than $1 to $3 trillion by 2040, 2050, which will overwhelm our system in general. And the worst part of it is their cognitive decline or this slowing of the brain is never diagnosed. That we, none of us talk about it. And that's the part that we kind of focus on, because if you can address that part, then you can avoid the dementia or at least push it back. A great majority of it you can push back. But nobody talks about the decline that happens because of our lifestyle, environment, all of that stuff.
Sorry for cutting across, I'm just excited. and is there any way of measuring it? You know, the way, like, say, you can see over the years, say you have a laptop, you can see battery, you know, usage is now down to 80% of what it's original. Is there any way, like, that we can measure our decline, our capacity as our brain, as a CPU, or as its processing power?
I imagine, like, heart disease happens over 30 or 40 years, like, it happens over a lifetime. I imagine it's some similar processes because it's probably a blood flow related, nutrient flow related at some level. Is that the same with dementia, that it happens over a lifetime? And as Stephen said, are there kind of ways of measuring
the decline?
Yeah, or the how well you're doing or whatever, you know, the way, because what's get measured gets managed.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have blunt methods of measuring cognition. I mean, there are these little tests that we do, you know, draw the box, draw the clock. Here's five words I'm going to give you. And I'll ask you again in 20 minutes, that kind of stuff. And we've done that for decades. And it's probably the most commonly used tests in medical system. They're great. They're good. But they're not very good as far as detecting early signs. Other ways of detecting early signs is through MRIs and these new machines like PET scan that looks at shrinkage or usage of glucose, right? So that kind of stuff. But I tell you, that's where, you know, things like what my son is doing and others, AI is going to be able to very soon. I mean, we're talking about within a few years, if somebody allows it. So just their phone, as they're talking on their phone, how they're talking and how that conversation changes within a day from morning to evening will tell you more accurately than any test where your cognition is, where your processing is, where your, you know, all your thinking processes and how fast is declining over time. And we'll do it so accurately. So, and we'll do it 20 years earlier than ever detecting dementia. So we're very close to having tools that can detect your cognition. And oh, here's the good news. Not just detecting decline, but actually saying, okay, you have decline in memory or decline in visual spatial or decline in attention. And if you do X, Y, and Z for you, we can improve it significantly. And this is not a gimmick. This is going to be around your own strengths, with your own capacities, with your own personality. We always talk about it. And if somebody makes me do Sudoku, I'm going to have a heart attack or a stroke. I hate Sudoku, but for somebody else, Sudoku is great, right? For me, I mean, Aisha is an amazing singer. I am terrible musician, terrible. I mean, absolutely terrible. 30 years of playing guitar, I'm, you know, I was, the joke is I've played Stairway to Heaven. I'm still on the third staircase. I mean, it's just terrible. And it's just because I didn't start early enough, right? I'm still at the chord and my ear. But I love guitar. So for me, that's cognitive activity. So by knowing your own tendencies and your own proclivities and your own likes and dislikes, they can put things in front of you that actually builds your cognitive capacity way better than any normal human being. We really are not tapping into the full capacity of human brain. Yeah, these people go there, oh, biohacking this and biohacking that. No, we're not there, but we're going to get there and it's going to be amazing.
Wow. And in terms of early detection, I think I was listening to something where you were talking about white spots and that they can be, they're now being found on younger and younger people. I wonder, is this a means of early detection when you mentioned with MRIs and that due to the way we're living nowadays, there's earlier and early indicators of people struggling with kind of neurological issues?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of neuroimaging biomarkers that are coming out, and they're not really used as a screening process for younger people. Unfortunately, the system is built in a way where people just wait until things get really, really bad, and then they get help, and it's too late. So one of the things that's important as part of a public health campaign is to let people know that they shouldn't really wait for their cognition to get so bad at a point where they're having difficulty with their activities of daily living. And to understand that, you know, the symptoms of, say, the worst, right, the disease, whether it's Alzheimer's disease or some other dementia, it doesn't start at the beginning of memory problems, that it's a fluid process, that you basically put yourself in a situation in life where your brain is either in a thrive mode, where it's functioning at its best capacity, or it's in damage control mode where, you know, instead of making good memories or instead of processing information, it's actually getting damaged and it's busy trying to fix all the damaging processes. If we think about it that way as young people, as people living day-to-day lives, I think it makes sense because then we start taking care of it.
And I want to make sure that people understand that this is such an empowering thing. So you can wait till you have dementia. But here's the beauty. If you start early enough, not only will you not have cognitive decline, but you will actually continually increase your cognitive capacity. We have in Loma Linda, one of the reasons we came to Loma Linda is to study, you know, the healthiest people in the world. That's the Seventh-day Adventists live here, or actually this is where we're studying them. We had a surgeon, Dr. Wareham, who did open to close surgeries up to age 95. This is unheard of. Something as complicated as surgery up to age 95, usually after age 65 or so, doctors, if they are still involved, they're like standing back and, you know, letting the others, you do that. Yeah, exactly. Okay. He was open to close. And we see a lot of 80 to 90 year olds so functional, so sharp, and that's accessible to all of us. And the beauty is if we understand that, we can start in our 20s, 30s with some minor tweaking and nothing weird, we can profoundly increase our cognitive capacity. One of those is focus and attention. We talk about this, that focus is the gatekeeper of consciousness. And the only thing we talk about focus is, oh, mindfulness, mindful breathing and meditation, which are great. We do that as well. But if you incorporate mindfulness and focus building into your daily life, the amount of your capacity that you will build in 10 years, in 5 years, is bewildering. People will shock themselves how their memory will improve exponentially. And that's the way we catch the younger people, because you can't tell a 30-year-old, oh, you're going to get dementia. Well, that's too far. But what if you can increase your capacity profoundly right now? And that's the beauty of, you know, this approach that we've taken on.
There's so many questions I want to ask you guys. Like, there really is. Like, what you're saying is so fascinating. Like, and it's almost likening it to like a computer, you know, the processing power of your brain. Like, and I heard that it's less about your brain cells and more about the connections that they make, the connections between the neurons, and not necessarily about, like, because we all have so many brain cells and they're dying and they're evolving and whatnot. And it's the connections. And I wonder, like, a bit like I buy a new computer and I'm added, how much RAM do I get? Do I want extra RAM? Do I want more CPU power or whatever it is, and there's all these various things. And I'm just thinking in terms of the brain, like, it's been an organ that's evolved over millions of years. And as you said, like, there's basic things that underpin it. Could you talk about, like, obviously we need to talk about food, because food is, like, I've heard you guys refer to food as being the kind of basic building block and one of the key components of your, you know, of the neuro, your NEURO acronym from your book, which I think is brilliant. So maybe if you could talk about food, and you could talk about the acronym if you want, because I think everyone listening to this is going, okay, right, I get it. I really don't want dementia. I don't want to be a burden on my family, on society. How do I prevent it? And your NEURO acronym, I think, is brilliant.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Yes. So the brain is fascinating. We are born with a set number of brain cells, and as we age, we lose some brain cells. But like you said, it's the connections between these brain cells that essentially determine our cognitive capacity, which means that it is in our control and in our power how many connections we build between each and every cell. And I think that is probably one of the most empowering messages out there. These connections are broken and made every single day, whether you're 5, 55, or 95. And the more connections you have, the more cognitive reserve you have. Cognitive reserve is the capacity of the brain to create a bank of these connections that can actually help us deal with trauma, whether it's physical trauma or, you know, psychological trauma or any kind of trauma within our environment that is caused by the kind of foods that we choose or the lack of exercise or stress or lack of sleep and things of that nature. So the more connections we have, and the better it is. And what determines these connections is the kind of lives we live. It sounds very simplistic. You're talking about all these incredible connections between the brain cells, and then it comes down to daily activities like the kind of foods that you put on your plate, or whether you take a walk or not, or what kind of, you know, life you have as far as stress is concerned, or as far as the different elements that determine your activities are concerned. All of these things make a huge, huge difference. And obviously, as you said, the acronym NEURO was really self-serving because we're neurologists and we came up with it because, you know, NEURO. And, you know, N stands for nutrition, E stands for exercise, U is unwind or positive stress. There is such a thing as good stress and bad stress. I'll let Dean talk about that. R is restorative sleep. We've been ignoring sleep for a very long time, but it is so critical to get a good night's sleep because that's the time when the brain cleanses itself. That's the time where it rejuvenates itself, and all of these information, you know, bites or the memories that we create, they are consolidated during sleep. And O is for optimizing cognitive activity, the kind of lives that we choose that help create those connections between the cells.
I love that.
Yeah. And is there a weighting of those? Like, you know, say I hear those five things and I go, each one of those is amazing. Like, is there
20%?
Is there a weighting? Like, say I'm lazy and I kind of go, I just want to, like, you know, say there's an exam coming up and there's 10 topics, but there's only going to be 5 questions. If I'm lazy, I'll just study 5 topics. Like, yeah. In terms of when I hear NEURO there, is there
you looking for the hack, Steve?
No, but I'm just curious. For anyone listening who kind of goes, yeah, I don't want dementia, but like, I just want to start. Like, it sounds intimidating to go after all 5 of them. Is there anyone that's the bigger lever?
Which is the biggest lever?
Yeah, it depends on you, right? So, but that's a very good point that you bring in because sometimes...
Lazy point, sorry.
No, it's a very important point, yeah. For example, we get a lot of women who are pregnant who just had a baby or just had a baby and say, we don't get any sleep. We say, I know, that's bad. I can't take that away. I mean, that's bad. Not getting good sleep is bad. But if you eat well and exercise, that's fantastic. So it depends on where you are in your journey. I tell you, nutrition is probably the most important thing. We always say nutrition, stress management, and sleep create the environment for destruction or creation of connections for the brain. And then exercise and mental activity make the connections. So if you haven't done those things, forget about exercise and mental activity. They're not going to do as much. So you have to have the nutrition and the sleep in place. You have to have the stress management in place. So nutrition is a good place to start, without a doubt. Second, if I have to say it, it's exercise. And by exercise, we don't mean, you know, do a marathon or anything like that. But you have to get tired. You know, people come to us and say, oh, Dean, I'm fine. I walk the neighborhood. I do gardening. I said, that's great.
I'm on my feet all day long in the kitchen.
Exactly. That's meditation. That's not exercise. You got to get tired. You got to get short of breath. And when you do, it's remarkable. So as Aisha was saying, we have 87 billion neurons, 80 to 90 billion neurons. Right? That's a lot of neurons, but it's not that. Now here's, they compare the brain to a muscle, not even close. I mean, think about, what is it? Steve Banner, Incredible Hulk?
Yeah,
Steve Banner.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
Bruce Banner.
There you go.
Let's say your normal brain is Bruce Banner. And the biggest muscular guy you know is three times bigger than he could have been, right? I mean, they're not going to be three times. But here's the power of the brain. Each of the 87 billion neurons can make a couple of connections or as many as 30,000 connections. That's no Hulk. That's a, you know, Hulk to the 20th power. That's huge. That's the power of the brain. That's the power of connection. And you can make those connections at any stage of your life. There's a study in UK. This is pre-GPS.
Yes.
And they did looked at taxi drivers. So London taxi drivers, yeah, versus bus drivers. Now, bus drivers had a same route, right? They don't have to memorize. They just are following a route. The taxi drivers had to take a test. And in London, they had to memorize those. We've been to London, those roads. They had to memorize all of them. And these are not young people. They're in their 50s, 60s, whatever the age. And they did MRIs before and after. And they did neuropsychological testing before and after. And what they found was, you know, the normal process of aging is if you're just living a normal Western life, your brain is shrinking. Everybody. But if you live an optimal life, so for these guys, the diet didn't change, just the mental activity. And what they saw was their brains actually grew.
By size.
By size. Visibly on the MRI. MRI is at a very blunt. So they actually saw, especially the part of the brain that's dedicated to memory, which is hippocampus, that part actually grew. That's remarkable. It means that we have that much power, that much control over those connections. And those connections are remarkable. Those connections give you power. Those connections give you speed of processing. Those connections give you thinking ability. The nun study, which was amazing. You want to tell them about the nun study?
Yeah, the nun study was done here in one of the states in the United States where these incredible nuns dedicated their bodies and their brains for science. And so the scientist team, they looked at their cognitive capacity. They did a lot of tests on them. And then when they passed away, they donated their bodies for science and they had autopsies done on their brain. And they found out that the nuns that had symptoms of, so there were two different groups. There was a group of women who actually had Alzheimer's disease and the symptoms were quite visible before they passed away. And then there was another group of women who didn't have any symptoms of Alzheimer's disease and, you know, they passed on their own terms. And when they did autopsies, they found out that despite having the pathologies of Alzheimer's disease in their brain, they never really manifested the disease. So they did have the amyloid plaques, the tau tangles.
And the brain was shrunken.
The brain was shrunken. So they did have the manifestations of Alzheimer's on their brain, but they never really had memory problems and they lived very healthy lives. And so they went back and they kind of compared it to women who already had the symptoms. And they found out that women who had the pathology of Alzheimer's disease in their brains, but never manifested it, they went back and they looked at their diaries. They were, you know, they had a very, very thorough vocabulary. They were very active in life. They were very involved with this, with their social life. And so that actually was protective. And even though they did have the disease, they never manifested it. So that's the profound effect of those connections that you build in life, and cognitive activity is so important.
Amazing. It's beautiful to hear that. When you hear that, it's like, oh yeah, friendship, it really is a superpower, and engagement. And when we live these active, fulfilled lives, naturally our bodies, it's like a wonderful antioxidant in a weird way.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, what you guys are doing, I mean, so when you're interviewing somebody, you have to be focused, you have to be aware, you have to be attentive, you have to have some knowledge in your head, you have to process that right away, you have to be emotionally connected. That's a lot of activity, but it's around your purpose. You remember that good stress, bad stress? Bad stress is when you're involved in activities that are not driven by your purpose, don't have clear timelines, don't have clear victories, don't have a runway that's yours, and it creates this long-term stressor in the body, which is profoundly destructive. Good stress, which is important. That's why you have a brain. That's why we have a brain. 3 pounds. Let's take this brain out.
We carry our props everywhere.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah. 3 pound brain, 2% of your body's weight, but it consumes 25% of your body's energy. Why? Why would you dedicate this much energy to this? And in fact, you sleep because of this. You sleep so that this can rest. You sleep so that this can restore. And by the way, sleep is not an evolutionary wise thing. I mean, you're going to be paralyzed and knocked out sort of for those bears, tigers, and you know, all of that. Why? Because this brain craves challenge. This brain lives, by the way, we are this brain. The rest of the body can be replaced, but this can't. So this brain craves to be pushed, to be challenged around its purpose. In the past, the purpose was survival. Now the purpose is side phenomena of survival, which is joy, fun, art, conversation, creativity, building things, you know, building communities. That's what this is for. And if you don't give it, it will shrink faster than ever. So you have to build a life around your purpose, which is what you guys are doing.
And how does that relate to, because you know the way in our current society, people, like a lot of people nowadays, I think retirement age is about 68 or something like that. And over the world, it's getting a little bit more and more because retirement is costing governments and companies too much in terms of pensions. I'm wondering, like, how does the current paradigm of retirement, because I see people who have been very relevant and very busy and involved in society, and then they retire and then they kind of become a little bit like they're missing their purpose. They're just swanning around and they're almost like looking for something to do. I'm wondering, do you see this effect in terms of retirement and mental capacity and linked to dementia, or is what I'm saying a complete load of crap?
No, you're right on it. In fact, it's the, of all the things, nutrition, exercise, the thing that actually showed the greatest decline were people that were very mentally active before retirement. And then they retired and went on the beach for 2 years, 3 years. I'm just picking a beach as an example. And they didn't do anything for several years. Their decline was the steepest. Why? Because their brain was used to being challenged, right? And all of a sudden it's not being challenged. And the body is telling itself, wait a second, why am I spending so much energy on this incredibly overpowered brain? I have to shrink right now, especially at this age, to survive. So we say, don't retire, rewire. Find a purpose, find direction, build around the things that you always wanted to do. But here's the thing. I really think that our job system, our job finding system is incredibly inefficient. Incredibly. We have this incredible tool, the brain and the creative centers of the brain. From the parietal lobe to the frontal lobe, it's a unique machine. We're talking about AI, beyond AI at this point. And all we do is force 18-year-old, 19-year-olds to take a direction. And then once they get a direction, even if they loved it at the beginning, then they're forced to repeat that thing over and over and over and over and over again. So all the creativity is stripped out of it. All the passion is stripped out of it. And all that's left is a machine that's running in muscles. And the brain is not being used. Whether you're a physician, where you just do the same thing over and over again, an engineer, an artist, and everything's becoming machine-like. And it's not only not healthy, it's not the most optimal use of that incredible machine, which is the brain. And if we figure out a way to find passion and build a life in front of it, and then, you know, we change over time. And if it, as we change, build another life in front of the new person and the new person, and because we evolve, we will actually give the person the best life, the happiest life, the most healthy life, but at the same time, the most productive element of that person comes to the surface. We do it wrong.
Wow. Well, one thing I'm hearing, and I just want to check, am I correct in hearing this? It's like, and I've heard this regularly, is the idea of doing new activities creates more neural pathways. And when we explore more with more childlike curiosity and like, oh my God, there's salsa dancing in 10. I'm going to go try it. I know I'm crap at dancing, but it's going to be fun. Or like, I'm going to go learn Arabic because I'm fascinated with that culture and I'd love to be able to understand their paradigm on life. And yes. I'm wondering, is this part of building a resilient brain and kind of a healthy neurological existence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Exploration and curiosity is at the core of brain growth. Unfortunately, we live lives where we're not given the opportunity to explore or we're discouraged to do so. But I think that is a beautiful way of our brain trying to not just survive, but to be resilient. And the more of that we can do, the better. And I hope that even, you know, it's only reserved for children. I hope that they bring it back for adults. And they do. There's a different language and there's a different way to explain that this building cognitive capacity is just that. Do things that challenge you, because when you do something in repeat, like Dean was saying earlier, your brain is incredible. It gets used to patterns. We're pattern seeking animals. And so when you're in a pattern, you do something over and over again, that part of the brain gets used to it and it doesn't get challenged anymore. So switching to another complex activity every once in a while actually grows the brain and it grows those connections that we definitely need.
It's kind of like the way a muscle, like, you know, the way sarcopenia is when your muscles start wasting away because you don't use them as you get older. The brain is just an overly developed, you know, 3-pound organ in our body that if we don't use it in a mental capacity, it's going to start closing down because it will require less energy.
Yes.
Yeah, most definitely.
So, yeah. Especially the creative centers, especially the thinking center. The frontal lobe is the newest member to the family. The frontal lobe of the brain is what makes us unique from the dolphins. It's not the size. They have bigger brains. The whales have bigger brains. Lots of animals. But what we have, is which is unique, is the connectivity and the convolution of the frontal lobe, which is the creative, the processing, the problem-solving part of the brain, right? And ironically, that's the part of the brain that shrinks the fastest. And ironically, that's the part of the brain that we subdue as a child, from a childhood. Here's an example. So we have patients that come to us that have frontotemporal lobe dementia. As the name implies, frontal temporal lobe dementia, which is the frontal lobe shrinks and the temporal lobe shrinks. Now, one of the functions of frontal lobe is inhibition, stopping you, which is important. In fact, that the way we have created the universe around us is by stop, go, stop, go, stop, go. So the stop is important. But when you overstop, over inhibit, you've taken out a very, very important part of the humanity. And innately, naturally, our societies are built so that we overstop children. But here's the thing, these 70, 80 year olds that come that have frontotemporal lobe dementia, all of a sudden have manifested this capacity that it appears that they never had before, artistic capacity. They can draw, not just the kind of drawing where they throw the paint against the wall and we call it drawing, which I like that too, but I've seen lots of those on TikTok, but real form structured art, and they've never done it before. How is that possible? Well, what we're figuring out is that we all, as children, have had that capacity to be creative, to be artistic, to be out of the box. You know, that's the whole point of the brain, to think out of the box so you can survive better, to think outside of the box so that you can discern between threat and non-threat, between thrive and non-thrive. But society subdues that, be it parents, be it just school systems, be it just us in a world where we say, no, 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 no. There is need for no, but there's too much no. And then all of a sudden you see these people coming out with artistic capacity, singing where they've never sang before.
Playing musical instruments.
Playing musical instrument better than they did before. I hope I don't have dementia until I develop my guitar skills, but who knows, it might get come to that. But it's that capacity that we're not fostering. We're just subduing, we're just subjugating, but we have to release that. We have to bring that creativity. The reason I'm bringing you guys, or hopefully us too, is to find your passion, and passion doesn't have to be just playing games, but passion and build around that is not just the momentary joy, it's actually the ultimate in brain health. We were talking about earlier, what's the most important thing? I said nutrition as a background, but I tell you, building a life around purpose for your health, not just for your joy, is the most important thing.
I like that. That's profound. Like this has gone bigger. We've gone even more
it's
macro.
It's nearly like we need a pause, like silence for the profundness just to land.
Boom.
Dean, will you say that again? I thought that was really good. We'll give you more silence. We'll bring in the profundness.
Yeah. So nutrition is great. Very important. You need that. Your exercise is important. Sleep is very important. But the biggest factor, not just for a momentary joy, but for brain building over time, is building your life around your purpose, challenging yourself around your purpose, pushing yourself around your purpose, not just settling for a repetitive, but pushing yourself, pushing the edge of the unbelievable. And nobody knows that better than you. Nobody knows where your edge is. You do. Keep pushing that edge around your purpose and your passion is the thing that's going to give the most bang for the buck as far as longevity is concerned, as far as brain health is concerned, and as far as brain capacity is concerned, well into your 80s, 90s, and beyond.
Amazing.
I love that. I love that.
I want to ask something now.
On the point of Dean watching TikTok, that'd make a great, like, that little monologue there with some beautiful images. I think I can see it, Dean. That's going to be
It's going to go viral. Okay, I've got two questions, and I've been twitching to ask them for a while now. One of them was, okay, there was a movie which we watched a few years ago. It was with Bradley Cooper, and it was called Limitless. Yeah. And it was that this guy, he took a drug, and his brain went from whatever way, there's the urban myth. I don't know how true it is. You'll know much better than we will. That we only use 2% of our brain or 5% of our brain or not that much of our brain anyway. And he took this drug and his brain was now operating at 99 or 100%. And he like made loads of money in a week. And he was able to, he just like learned languages and like everyone's, oh my God, like we're all like, how do we live more like that? And I'm wondering, is it true that we like, what percent of our brain approximately do we use? Do we have these superpowers that we haven't unlocked yet? And
what's the answer?
Yeah.
And I have a
part two
of
that question, but
there are superpowers that we have not unlocked. That's yes. I mean, I don't mean that superpowers. You're not going to, don't jump a building. You're not going to be able to fly. No, don't, not that kind of superpower. But the first part, which is we only use 10%. No, we use 100% of the brain, but at much, much, much lower efficiency. And the efficiency matters. And starts very early in life. We don't build focus. In fact, we do everything possible in our power to eliminate focus, to alter focus, to distract focus, to destroy focus. And focus is the gatekeeper. Focus is the gatekeeper of consciousness. And if you build focus, then the next step is memory building capacity. The next step is processing capacity, ability to solve problems. So here's a gate. When you go to YouTube and watch these people that play chess with 15 people blindfolded, right? They're not geniuses. Well, some of them are, let's be honest. Some of them are, but it's actually that they've built the capacity to focus. They've built the capacity to bring those images to their head. They've built the capacity to process multiple things at once, not multitasking, that's bad, but to process all of these in a visual capacity all at once and to do it fast. You can do that. You can build that. You can build that capacity. You can't do it overnight, but you can slowly build that capacity profoundly. And we don't do that. All we do is the gatekeeper, the guy at the door, the bouncer at the door, which is the focus, we knock him out. The door's closed forever. And then we say, oh, I was trying to go to the kitchen and halfway there, I forgot what I was trying to do. Well, yeah, because that information was never put in the right file, folder, and cabinet. So that when you go there, you open it up in an organized way and pull it out. But you can do that. One of the tricks that we kind of did with our kids, then you'll see what on there when you go to their site, is so ability to memorize decks of cards, right? Like what card comes next. They go over it. And so you can do, the world record is 56 decks. 56 decks. Imagine that. I think it's around there. Maybe it's broken by now. I don't know. But so it's not that it's not a genius affair. It's certain tasks, ability to focus, ability to link things, ability to connect images to previous images that you already have. And when you get good at that, which none of us are trained in that, you actually build incredible memories. And that's a superpower. That's a superpower. I'm not saying that everybody's going to get to 56 decks, not that you would want to. Maybe Vegas is going to come after me for building that capacity and everything. But But it's there. We have the capacity to significantly increase our focus, significantly increase our memory, significantly increase our processing speed, how quickly we think, how quickly we solve problems. It's all there within us.
Wow.
No,
we need to go practical. But yeah,
I could spend ages going around all these occulty ones and pop science ones, but I really have to talk about nutrition because I think it'd be unfair not to. So nutrition, you mentioned, is possibly the second one behind A Life of Passion. And I just wonder, in terms of nutrition, it's the obvious one and it's something that is so paramount to our work. I wonder if you could just talk about, what foods not to eat and what foods to eat and how to approach it, because I know one of your expertise is kind of behavioral change and how to, because it's willpower will get you so far, but community and support will get you further.
An environment.
Or that expression, if you want to go quick, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
And you've got your 9 foods and your 7 rules, I think, that are to do with food. And I think those are probably, there's lots of people listening that those will be very relevant to.
Yes, absolutely. No, this, all this, the sexy picture of the brain capacity and our ability to build a beautiful brain will never happen if we don't have the right medium, right? So for example, if you have the most expensive, paint, say for example, or the most expensive brushes, but if you don't have the right canvas, you will never have that beautiful painting that you want. We think of nutrition like that. It's the medium, it's the canvas, where you can build all this beauty around. And it's fascinating because it's a constant environment that keeps changing in our body because it's something that we put in our body, 2 to 3 or 4 times a day, depending on how many times we eat. And this sounds drastic, but every meal that you eat either helps you build that brain capacity or it completely brings you down. So you have to start from scratch because your body and your brain is busy getting rid of all the harmful substances that actually break down these wonderful connections between brain cells. So it's incredibly important to eat well. And there was a point where nutrition was not given any importance, but with science developing and with so many wonderful scientists and universities working on seeing the relationship between what we eat and brain health, we now know that it is profoundly important. And there's been a shift from looking at vitamins, because there was a time where people would look at vitamin C and vitamin E and all the other micronutrients and their effect on brain cell. We now know that food patterns matter more because we don't eat one vitamin at a time. We eat food and we eat food in different combinations. So it's the synergy between these food products that matter the most. And so when it comes to nutrition, looking at food and dietary patterns, which has been the core of our research, we now know that every diet is basically a variation of the same theme. And the theme is eat more plants. So more fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, beans, lentils, nuts and seeds, and getting rid of harmful substances such as saturated fats. These are the fats that are found in dairy products and animal products. Getting rid of refined carbohydrates. Not all carbohydrates are bad. I'm sick and tired of all the fights on Instagram and Twitter and social media about carbs are being bad. No, that's nonsense. Carbohydrates are great. Complex carbohydrates are the unit of fuel for the brain. Mm-hmm. It's the refined carbohydrates that sometimes cause problems for people. And it's wonderful to actually get it from unprocessed foods, from plant foods. And so if we adopt that pattern, either we adopt it at its extreme, at its most optimal, or make small little changes depending on where we are in our journey, it actually benefits the brain significantly. And so shying away from micronutrients and vitamins and eating a more whole, unprocessed, plant exclusive, or at least plant predominant diet is the way to go for brain health.
And speaking of the 9 items, although we don't believe in the superfood, even blueberries, but there are some foods that stand out. And the reason we brought up Neuro9 was at least if they can add these 9 in their diet and every day, it's going to help. But it's better to look at food patterns than just one thing. And you're going to help me out here. So it's, greens. Greens are the big
Let's
ones.
Let's test your memory here.
No, greens are the big one. Greens.
Go deep.
No, I'll tell you, the greens.
Yes.
I mean, talk about superfood. Something as silly, as simple as greens. Mm-hmm. Studies show that people who eat 2 or 3 servings a day live. Now, we take vitamins with the hopes of maybe increasing our longevity by a few months here and there. But greens, 11 years.
Yeah.
Why is there not commercial? I mean, there should be commercials every night about greens. I mean, Popeye had it right. It's the superfood. So add 2 to 3 servings of greens in your diet.
Yeah.
And so by greens, you're talking about like, you know, adding spinach with your dinner or, you know, steaming yes. kale and having it, green beans or salad or sprouts, or it's that type of greens along with your
That's
dinner.
Correct.
It's not like having a bowl of kale.
Well, yeah, I mean, a bowl of kale would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just hard to eat, though.
Right, yeah, but just kind of spreading green leafy vegetables in our meals, whether it's in a smoothie in the morning or a salad or in a sandwich, adding green leafy vegetables really, truly makes a difference. And the study that Dean quoted, you know, people who ate a serving of greens had 11 years younger brain when they did neuroimaging. That's just fascinating. So that's the power of the micronutrients that are found in greens. And then you have things like whole grains, you know, the whole grains that, you know, essentially unprocessed grains, they are so important because they release glucose as a fuel for the brain, and the fiber keeps us healthy. Then you have beans and legumes, which are incredible sources of plant-based protein. And then you have cruciferous vegetables,
which
like cauliflower, broccoli, kale, Brussels
cabbages.
Sprouts, all of these have incredible micronutrients that not only fight inflammation and oxidation, because we have inflammation in our body all the time, they fight that, but they also provide certain micronutrients that actually help provide the environment for the connections to be made. And so the rest are what? Blueberries, we have green tea, we have
beans,
flax.
We have
flax or chia.
Flax seeds and chia seeds. You know, the concept that fat is bad, that's not true. It's the type of fat that matters. We want good fats in our body and we want to avoid bad fats. The good fats and the most important fats are omega-3 fatty acids, which are found in flax and chia seeds. And the specific type of fat that is needed by the brain on a daily basis is DHA, dexahexanoic acid. And you can derive that from plant-based foods or from algae. You know, we did a systematic review where we found out that there are 2 specific stages in life when people need DHA more often. And that's the early stages of life where the brain is growing for children. And then later on in life, if people have some mild cognitive impairment or the beginnings of some memory problems, it's very important for them to consume DHA on a regular basis. And that comes from seeds or, if needed, from algae-based omega-3 fatty acids.
I love the way your Neuro9 are groups of vegetables,
or like the
or
food
fruit,
patterns,
like whole grains, beans. So they really encompass the overall food pattern that you're trying to move people to, rather than being eat turmeric. This is the silver bullet. You need to eat to be healthy.
Just sprinkle it on your beef. No, it's
I really like that. It's big. It's big blocks. It's great. Really, really good.
Yeah. And then in terms of like, obviously, okay, so we're talking whole plant foods and your greens and all the various aspects of it. And in terms of like, what do you see as the kind of ones, if someone's listening and they kind of go, okay, my mom, myself, my sister, my auntie, my dad, everyone in my life, we all want to live long, happy lives. Like, what are the main things to avoid in terms of food? Like, what are the things which you see as the kind of, you know, and obviously you're talking patterns here again. We, you know, patterns are very
and
applicable.
And in that question, just alcohol, because I'm sure many Irish people in particular are going, can we have alcohol? How does alcohol work? I'm sure many people have that
question.
Oh,
don't take
also.
Us there.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, sorry.
You know.
Don't make us villains.
Yeah, up to now, people liked us. They said, oh, they're a nice couple. They're so friendly.
We've lost so many friends.
Now you're going to lose everybody right here.
So, okay, so well, I'll start by saying,
hey, we love you.
No. I'll start by saying that we drink a glass of wine here and there as well. So
every
just
quarter,
transparency.
Like.
But you know, I hated, especially in the United States, we kind of shape science to our life. Shape science to our own liking. Yeah. It doesn't work like that. So to the best of our knowledge today, and that's actually one of our phrases in our wall, our living room, dining room, the walls are painted with the kind of paint where you can write on the walls. So the kids go and write their ideas and creative ideas and all that. And there's a statement, to the best of our knowledge today, that's, I think, the most humble statement in science. It has nothing to do with us, with our degrees, nothing. It has to do with the data, and be aware of the data and don't overstate it, don't understate it, and live with whatever we have, even if it's incomplete. We don't have to force truth, you know, oh, this is 100%. No. But to the best of our knowledge today, the amount of alcohol that's beneficial for your brain is zero. Zero. Yes, yes. I'm sorry. Don't hate us.
We're so politic.
Yeah. I tell you, we've never gotten, we did one video on alcohol. It was a 1 minute video I did. It got 150,000 views in like in a few hours. And it was not always the nicest things. It was but nonetheless, that's alcohol. But like I said, we drink wine here and there, and that's we live with that reality. So that's the alcohol component. Yeah. But as far as the rest of the foods, I think the most important thing people can do is avoid fat, saturated fat. Saturated fat is terrible. I mean, we live in a world where people actually are saying things like, oh, your body's number one requirement is fat. By the way, without any data, complete extrapolation. And there's this one guy who's eating livers and, you know, all of that stuff and saying fat is the most important. It's not. Saturated fat destroys the arteries, creates the four pathways that we've actually studied. We've written multiple papers on this. Four pathways of destruction: inflammation, oxidation, glucose dysregulation, and lipid dysregulation. Four pathways. Guess what? The one thing that affects all four: saturated fat. Mm-hmm. So saturated fat is one thing that you should be aware of, you should avoid.
And when people say saturated fat, so, you know, what does that mean? What kind of foods does, you know, has saturated fats? It's essentially animal products. You know, it's dairy products, it's cheese, it's red meat, it's chicken. Those have the most saturated fats.
And coconut and palm.
Unfortunately, yeah, as good as coconut oil tastes sometimes in desserts, it does have the same kind of saturated fats that comes in animal products. And so reducing saturated fats, I agree, would be the best thing to do to eliminate or at least reduce the risk of dementia. And you see this in multiple different dietary patterns. You know, people hear about the Mediterranean diet or the MIND diet or DASH dietary approach to stop hypertension. It's essentially a dietary construct where you're given scores. You're given a high score if you eat certain foods, and you're given a low score if you eat certain foods. And you're given high scores when you eat a plant-based diet, and you're given low scores if you eat sources of saturated fat. So it's consistently seen in different lines of research. And so I think we have enough information of what kind of foods are great for our brain and for reduction of risk of these horrible brain diseases that we hear, like Alzheimer's disease, other dementias, and stroke.
I'm going to speak about my wife in positive, glowing terms here. So it might be weird, but she won the Youngest Researcher Award for her work on the largest database in America, the California Teachers Study, 133,000 people over 20 years, looking at Mediterranean diet. And I want to introduce that because the next time somebody says Mediterranean diet, tell them that Aisha did the research. And Mediterranean diet, as it's being done in research, is actually plant-based diet. They just want to use the word Mediterranean because it's sexy. Because the way they score Mediterranean diet is the way she just said it. They give you a high score for plants, veggies, blah, 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 all of that stuff, and omega-3 either from fish or from plant-based source. That's it. That's the only source of meat. But it could be in other sources as well, from plant as well. And you get a low score for meat, cheese, dairy, and all that stuff. So every place that you see the term Mediterranean diet, in a scientific way, in a scoring way, right, in a research way, they're talking about plant-based diet. And the only reason they're using Mediterranean because it seems like, you know, somebody sitting next to a lake eating a pizza with cheese and wine and with a violin, you know, played in the background. It's none of those things. Maybe the lake. Yeah.
And the vegetables. You said one word there that I'm sure that lots of people were thinking. Like, you know, I hear a lot of people saying about the importance of fish for healthy brain development. And, I eat salmon every week because the healthy oils, it's really important for my brain or my family's brain or whatnot. Could you talk about fish and your experience and your studies and your research in terms of brain health?
Yeah, no, I'll be honest. There's really no data that shows the harm of fish for brain health or for health in general. But we know that a healthy diet can be with or without fish. That's for certain. So you can definitely have a healthy diet. It's not something that you have to have for better health. And the specific component of fish is, again, the omega-3 fatty acids that can be derived from plant foods as well. I think it's just a matter of choice. And our concern with fish is...
We don't eat fish.
The main concern that we have is that, unfortunately, we've been damaging our oceans. And there's a lot of different kinds of chemicals and heavy metals. And animals, being bioconcentrators, they essentially store these chemicals and these heavy metals in their flesh. And then when you consume animal products, you consume all of that along with it as well. So from a health perspective, that's the concern. And if you pay attention, there's been, you know, there's always recommendations for, say, for example, for pregnant women not to eat beyond a certain amount of fish. Why would you tell a pregnant woman not to eat fish, but then everybody else should be eating it as well? Because you're concerned about the heavy metal. That doesn't really make any sense. So the optimal diet would be a diet free of all of these added chemicals in the oceans, unfortunately.
And of all the chemicals, and by the way, fish are powerful bioconcentrators. In fact, better than other animals because they're living in a medium that is saturated with chemicals, right? Of all the chemicals in the ocean that's been added, by the way, they've been able to measure everything you can imagine, even Prozac in fish. I mean, we're talking about in measurable quantities. That's how much we're adding chemicals into the oceans. Of all the chemicals we're adding into the ocean and that are concentrating in fish, guess how many are we measuring? And we're measuring it inconsistently. Just two. Mm-hmm. Mercury and lead.
Yeah.
We're not measuring the rest. So we worry about that. We say, okay, if omega-3 is the best thing about fish, I can get omega-3 in other ways.
Mm. Yeah, wow, very clear.
Yeah, good messaging. Very good. Do you find the same? Like, I know if we're getting around towards the end, but do you find in the Loma Linda, like these incredible blue zone, long living people that you've been that you've done incredible work with, do you find that there's a correlation between the most plant based and there's the correlation across everything which you found? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost a dose response relationship. The more you eat plants, the healthier you are. The less you eat saturated fats, the healthier you are. And I think that's one of the most empowering messages out there as far as diet is concerned. It's not an all or none phenomenon. The more you do, the better it is. And every small incremental step of change towards that positive, towards that optimal diet makes a huge difference as far as disease reduction, as far as cognitive capacity, as far as longevity is concerned. So, you know, whatever people can do, whether it's adding half a cup of greens or swapping their burgers for a bean burger, say, for example, that makes a huge difference. So, yes, it does.
I love the clarity around this. One final question. I know we're getting close to the end of time. I remember hearing you talk about behavioral change and that as doctors, you can only see patients for kind of 10, 15 minutes and that the real key to behavioral change is in the community. I remember you talking about research where it was like, it was in the barbershops. It was in the place where people congregate. And the more you can get like these lifestyle measures where there's passion, where there's eating more plant-based foods, where there's good sleep, where there's the neuro, the acronym of the neuro, the more you can get that into society, the more it changes behavior. I wonder if you could talk briefly about that. I'm sorry I'm asking such a big question.
No, I'm so glad you asked that question.
That's a beautiful
one. Thank you for asking that question.
Exactly, to end with. The word culture, if you go into the business world, once you get past the numbers and everything, it comes back to culture. When you go to health world, once you get past the elements of, you know, resources and everything, it comes back to culture. Culture is not what people think is the general culture is when ideas and behaviors become ubiquitous in a population without them even thinking about it. It becomes part of their very personalities because they've lived with these behaviors, these ideas, these perceptions. And if you can create that, you've created, there are different ways to create change, but that's the most effective way. When that's why our work, we just won the National Academy of Medicine Award for our work in the African American churches, and we're doing this in other communities as well, is we don't preach. We don't say, oh, go all plant-based. No, let's add, and let's make sure that everybody hears this. Because if you turn left, you hear it. You turn right, you hear it. Greens. Let's start with greens. Let's add 2 servings of greens into our diet. By just doing that, and everybody hears it. Everybody does it. It's easy enough. Maybe the community starts creating a community garden. And all of a sudden, the whole culture changes around just greens. But it's not just greens. Because once you start a positive path that moves a group of people, there's a threshold. There's a threshold effect. They call it 10 to 15%. All of a sudden, that starts a wall of change, a storm of change, a pattern of change that's unstoppable. But that starts with simple, one-step, doable behavior that a group of people can build around. And it could be just greens. It could be just garden. I mean, when have you heard people do that? It's either go all this way or that way, or preaching or talks or academics giving you all kinds of numbers. No. Listen to the communities. Find out where the possibilities to make that one change. Maybe it's the walk. Maybe this community has a beautiful place around the beach. Let's get 20 people to walk, and then everybody else watches and say, oh, I'm going to join them. Once you hit a threshold, all of a sudden becomes a storm. Maybe the community is around talks, and those talks are brain building, right? Coming together around the place where 20, 30 people come and do some act or some song or some music or some conversation. And then all of a sudden the whole community builds around that. That's how you create patterns that are unstoppable. Not the one-off little superfood this or super talk this or super pill this or, you know, hacking this or hacking that. You don't hack. You listen and change people where they are, not where you are.
I love Lovely. That. What a beautiful place.
We are the product of our environment.
Yes.
Really, really beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. This has been brilliant. Really is.
I love chatting.
I could ask a million more questions, but I'm like just going to sit on my hands.
You guys are the public health front.
Absolutely.
I'm not just saying that you be, you know, fulsome flattery or anything. It's these conversations that get the message out. That's what matters.
Thank you for doing you're doing. It's really making a huge difference in the world.
Oh, we love it. And you guys are deadly. You're great fun. Great crack. Sorry to bring it down. We were up on such a high, exciting topic, and then we went all serious again. But you're brilliant.
Well, you had to go into practical.
But in terms of your book, so you have the Alzheimer's solution, and then there's one called the 30-day plan, isn't there? The 30-day.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Right we the 30-day plan was an extension of the first book, and it's essentially creating opportunities for people to just pick a book and read about the science very easily. One of the things that's not happening is clarity around science. It's more of opinions and, you know, Twitter fights. I think our job is to make sure that we clearly bring out what the science shows to people so that they could lead a very healthy life. I think people are very smart and they're very intelligent. We just have to give them the right information and help them implement these phenomenal, important changes into their lives. And it's been so much fun doing that.
Brilliant. Brilliant. You're amazing.
And actually, you're a culinary artist as well. So you're really applying that as well with as medicines, recipes. Which is incredible.
I love it. I love it. Absolutely.
That's
love
great. Talking. But this has been brilliant.
Yeah, you're amazing. Where can people learn more? Are you on TikTok, Dean? I know you mentioned TikTok earlier.
I know
just
you're
curious.
On Instagram.
Yes, we now are on TikTok.
Yes.
We're the Brain Docs on social media.
The Brain Docs, yes.
The Brain Docs. And our website is also The Brain Docs. We just kind of kept it simple so people know what we're all about. And would love to connect with everyone. And, you know, whether it's on social media or on email or Dean and Aisha Sherzai. So, you know, it'd be wonderful to connect and to spread this information.
Well, you guys are amazing. I've enjoyed this immensely. And you're such
really
fun. And
have.
Please come visit sometime. We'd have a great laugh.
Do you ever come over to Europe?
Oh,
we have a wonderful world over here. Yeah. Or we're part of a wonderful world. I shouldn't say that.
We have so many great friends. And now you guys are our friends. And yeah, we can't wait to meet you guys in person.
Come in person.
Right. Yeah. Well, right. Likewise, you're Redondo Beach, California.
Yeah.
Oh,
is that near
away.
LA? Is that near LA?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Oh, that is LA. Okay.
Yes. We're next to, you know, Venice Beach, Santa Monica,
Oh, wow. Yeah. You're near the cool. That's where all the cool kids live. You guys are cool kids.
We're trying to act like cool kids, yes.
Yeah. No, wow. Next time you come here, we'll get a bike. And we love this thing where we go from Redondo all the way to Santa Monica, right next to the ocean. So we'll do it together.
Such a beautiful ride. You have to come.
Okay, it's a date. It's a date. I love it.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much. You're amazing. And
thank
please
you.
Stay in touch.
We love you guys. Really. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Back likewise. At you.
Bye.
Thanks, 10 million.
Thanks, Aisha. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Take care.
That was amazing. The bit that I like beyond feeling like I was speaking with incredible humans, there was such a friendliness, a kindness, a warmth, a joy. And like, we spoke about passion, and it wasn't like about medical stuff. Like, we covered all the medical stuff. We covered lots of
medical
stuff.
I love the soft stuff, like, because we could have gone down the whole food. We could have spent the whole time talking about food and the practicality.
Just so deadly. Dean and Aisha, incredible.
I love them. I love them. And I really do want to go cycle.
I dream of, I see ourselves on that
cycling Redondo Beach.
I'm doing a bit of manifesting right now just to feel the wind. We're going up. Oh,
yeah. Anyway, less about us. I hope you really got something good out of this, because I think it's so applicable. And I've heard Dean and Aisha quote that up to 80% of what they found in their own experience of dementia can be related to lifestyle issues. So what
and
you eat.
Recap, what you eat. I think their acronym was Neuro. So it was like
Neuro.
Nutrition. Try to eat as much plant-based
exercise.
As you can.
Exercise.
Exercise.
Anyway,
it was
all in the podcast.
It was the store. Anyway, it's back. If you rewind, you'll hear it back. But they're deadly. They're wonderful. Check out their books.
And you'll find them on Instagram and all the social media. So
yeah,
I hope you really
dogs.
Enjoyed this. If you enjoyed this, please share with your family, your friends. I think this is such an important message. As they said, it's the biggest cost to all the healthcare systems. So together.
And I think together as a society, the more we can focus on finding our passion, finding more joy, finding more friendship, I think we will live more healthier, happier, connected, joyous lives. Wow, that was a big intro.
Wow,
intro.
What an outro. We need music for that. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
See you later. Bye. 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 Auf Wiedersehen.